So, Verda Vahalas, my family's in the back, so I guess how we can do this. I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you just look over there, it's my wife Jamie and Hannah, kind of pop up Hannah or wave, Rachel, Sarah, Joshua, Isaiah, and little Samuel. He's our Czech born baby. And we are, as you know, missionaries through Czech Republic, which is center of Europe, middle, right in the middle of Europe. And I don't know how much you remember about Czech. Anybody remembers anything? And y'all can ask questions. Just don't be afraid. What time? How much? Okay. That's all right then. I'll leave with you. My kids heard it. They can do it. Well, but you know, they can do it instead of me. They got it memorized. But yeah. Anyway, Czech is right now. They continue to rise in rank and well, ring. They continue to rise in their first place as the most atheistic country in the world, bar none. It has surpassed. I think there was a revival in some of the European countries. They used to be pretty close to Czech in terms of atheism. They experienced revival. I think one of them was it Latvia? One of the Baltic countries used to be way up there. It's not anymore. But Czech continues to dominate that category, and they're proud of it. Right now, the recent research that came out right around when we were here in States or just before we left was the Pew Research kind of looked at the context, and they said that there are as many people believe in magic as there are people who believe in God in Czech. I mean, it's really, they studied all the different Eastern European countries around, you know, that formerly were part of kind of the Russian influence, and they looked at Poland and Hungary and all these, and Czech score so low beyond, like below all these countries. It was just very alarming. Even the statisticians were kind of surprised. So it is very atheistic, secular. It's very difficult to do mission work because there's just so much groundwork that has to be done, kind of like plowing on concrete sort of thing. And it has been over the years called the missionary graveyard, because missionaries would come, they would get discouraged, and they leave because various circumstances. You don't see much fruit. You just kind of really have to go by faith the whole time, because you don't. You might be sowing, you're sowing hard, but you don't see anything grow, or it takes real long time to grow. Sometimes the loneliness, the climate, the people are very unapproachable, very closed. All those things combined, the language, second hardest to learn, ask my wife. It's not easy. For Americans, apparently Chinese kind of leads the way, and Czech is in top three. So all those things combined make it pretty rough. So just kind of give you context. And nobody cares about Christianity. Nobody at all. It's about less than one quarter of a 1% evangelical, and that's generous. And that's a country where you had John Huss, right? You probably heard of him. That's a country that had lots of brushes with Reformation. I lived about 25 kilometers from a city that was the birthplace of Jan Blahoslav, who used to study under Luther and Melanchthon. And right now, there is no church in that city. No Bible-believing church. No church that, you know, you would consider healthy, at least. There's a place that the Salvation Army runs a church there. And it's not very healthy. People don't go there. So, that kind of gives you an idea. It's a pretty sad situation. And it's no surprise. That's how I grew up. So you know I'm from Czech. That's one of the reasons I think you're partnering with us, because you understand the value of sending the nationals to reach the nationals. I mean, that's that has been confirmed over and over. So I don't have to harbor on that. But I grew up in Czechoslovakia back then, behind the Iron Curtain. Had to learn Russian because you had to, as part of a communist regime. And then got a chance after communism went down in 1989, come to States around 1996. And that's the first time I've heard the gospel. In fact, that's the first time I've seen a Bible or seen a Christian. So that kind of gives you an idea again, the context. Unless you grow up in a Christian family in Czech, you probably never met a Christian. And the Christian families, there were very few, and they tried to stay under the radar because the communists were after them. Just to give you an idea, one of the founding pastors of a church that we work with in Czech, because of his just very successful work that he has done in this church, he was then moved to Prague. And in Prague, the Czech version of KGB took hold of him, tortured him to a point of death, and they would not even release the place of burial because he was too disfigured. They didn't want anyone to see how badly they've just, you know, tortured him. So the first time really I've heard the gospel was here in States. I became a believer in 1996. And as you hear the gospel, as you realize what the reality is, the next occurring thought is, you know what? I don't know one person in my entire life in Czech that has ever heard this. I didn't know one person, whether it's family, friends, extended relatives, whatever. I didn't know anyone who has ever heard this. And so that was, I think, very formative in God moving me. And then later on, as I got married and we have children, back to Czech Republic to reach them with the gospel. And so that's kind of a context. So you know where we are, where we're coming from, and where we went. Czechs don't care about the theology. They don't care about God. They don't care about Christ. They're just indifferent. And so it's very difficult. In fact, they would discourage you. Even some of the people, believers, would discourage you from coming. My parents are not believers, and when I told them I would be a missionary, first of all, I think they were disappointed because to them that's a waste of time, and I could have been, I don't know, some sort of a businessman who can, you know, speak two languages well and go back and forth. But for them, it was disappointing. And they kind of discouraged me, saying, why would you come here to Czech Republic? Nobody cares about Christianity. Nobody cares. You know, for them, it's a mentality of supply and demand. There is a demand, then you supply it. But there is no demand. Why be a missionary here? Now, that's the worldly way of thinking, right? Now, if Jesus had to wait for us to finally come around and realize that we need Him, He'd stay in heaven. Because nobody would ever come around and express need for Christ. So, the very reason that nobody wants you there is the reason that you go. So, this was our vision. I'll read it out because it's tiny. And if you have our prayer cards, it's actually on the side as well. And it was simple because we understand the context is very hard. We have to lay biblical foundation and think in future terms. A lot more maybe than it's usual here in States. Because we understand that we're going to be plowing. We might be sowing, but if we reap, we don't know. But we better prepare future generations who will reap. Because Jesus says, you remember the parable of the sower? You know what the biggest point of that parable is? Yeah, it's great. You get to know about the hearts, right? The bad heart and the fertile heart, right? But the greatest promise is at the end. Because it says there will be a harvest. Right? There is a promise at the end. It's not about as much as about the souls, even though it's important. Three of them are no good. One of them is good. But the good one produces. And that's the greatest encouragement of the kingdom, right? The ground will produce. And so we got to be prepared for the ground to produce. We might not be there to be the harvesters, but we better prepare the harvesters. So the whole idea of 2 Timothy 2:2, you know, the things you've heard in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. That's that whole idea of laying a biblical foundation for future generations. And that's through evangelism, church planting, and training leaders, which essentially is the book of Acts, if you look at it. Paul goes, evangelizes, there comes a group of believers, builds a church, establishes a church, and then he trains the future leaders, and he leaves them and moves on. So that's where we headed. And this was our family about 3 or so years ago, with big old pile of luggage. I'm not sure how well you can see it. So that's what's going to look like probably this time again, coming the end of November. And easy. So evangelism, the way we do this, there's just different ways that we really try to engage the culture. For most, there are more formal ways, more informal ways. The formal way is you just have, like, I have a friend right here at the top. It's just simply a lecture. A buddy of mine reaches to students at a university, and he needed somebody to do a lecture, which really, it's not about the lecture. You know, he invites faculty and students, but it's not about a lecture. It's about the lecture kind of establishes certain context, and on the basis of that lecture, you can invite the people to go and take Exploring Christianity, which is a course that's made in England, translated into Czech, goes through Book of Mark, explains who Jesus is, what is the gospel, and the whole gamut. But really, lecture is kind of like a, let's establish a common ground. And if you have few people to show up, that's great. We had actually 3 people to show up, which means 3 people had thought about it enough that they were willing to commit 10 weeks of their, 10 weeks to do these weekly studies. So that was great. Again, Czech is not much of gathering for spiritual things. They're not. If you invite somebody, if you just Google how many times you have had a crusade in Czech Republic in past 25, 30 years. There's probably none. Not one that I know of. We tried one time to invite people just to see the Jesus film, which is not as, you know, not that big of a deal. And nobody showed up. We invited people, I think it was several days prior to that, you know, youth, whoever, just invited as many people as we could, handed out things, and nobody showed up. Only the missionaries were there. So, Czechs don't care. The second thing that's also possible is just go to high schools where you can tell them about the American culture and then invite them later on to practice their English in a coffee house where you can really have one-on-one conversation. Because if there is any kind of progress of the gospel, it's always personal evangelism, always relationships. Czechs will not listen to you if they don't know you. In fact, if you greet a Czech on the street that you don't know, it's considered rude. So I remember even listening to a pastor who, from his perspective, went to Slovakia and was sharing, doing street evangelism. And people were listening to him. They were enjoying things. They were discussing things with him. They were interacting with him. And so after that, he went to Prague, tried to do the same thing. And he expected the same result. And he said people were cussing at him. People were spitting at him. He said they were throwing the things that they would hand him in the trash. I mean, it's a different environment. Personal evangelism works very simple, just like here. Just make friends. Make friends and then tell them about Jesus. We have on the top corner, that's the Czech teacher that my wife had for a year or so. We were invited to her home, which is a good sign that we are growing in a relationship. She was okay with having us over, and so we got to share the gospel with her. And then our kids, obviously, you know, kids are great evangelists, whether you know it or not. They help you to connect with so many people. I have a friend who has planted one church in Czech, and at the time of the planting, he had several kids, and it was very useful because whatever he was doing, you know, with the kids, the families, they wasn't really able to connect because of the kids. And then he moved, and his kids are all grown up. And he has the hardest time now because he doesn't have that common ground with his surroundings. So it's interesting how God uses, you know, the blessings that He gives you in form of children, even to share the gospel or make the church. So down at the bottom, that's Sam, one of the friends in a village, and The stories that I share about Sam, they're kind of fun, and you know, Sam, he's from a small village. His parents don't even have a car; they don't drive, and so he doesn't get out much. And one time we were coming back from a soccer tournament, and I had a bunch of our kids and some other kids, including Sam, in our van, and I said, you know, let's treat them after this tournament. And I was going to go to the only fast food restaurant we have, which is KFC. And that's the only one we have where we are. We haven't had KFC in States yet. So we're going to KFC, and we're pulling up, and I'm telling the kids we're going to eat. And Sam is really confused because he expects us to get out of car. Well, we're not getting out of car. And Sam's like, so how are we going to get the food? What's going to happen? I said, they're going to hand it out to us through the window. And he is stunned. He says, through the window? They give us food through the window? And so he's amazed. And then you can just see he's kind of puzzled. So where are we going to eat it? You know, we never ate anywhere exceptional outside or at a table or something. I said, we're going to eat it in a car. And I was like, really? In a car? It's just, you know, my wife one time, his brother and Sam came to our house, and my wife handed him that cup with like a Kool-Aid with ice in it. And they were just amazed. Like, there's ice in this thing. Wow. And one of the guys, you know, his brother dropped it on the ground. And the ground was filthy, nasty, muddy, you know, from our dog. And he picked it up, put it back in his cup because he didn't want to waste the and tried to figure out what is this, you know. We just say, it's ice. You just, you know, get a tray, put it in the freezer, and that's how it works. They don't think in these terms. You know, ice in drink is unusual. So anyway, but then as you have these fun moments, then you also have moments where you can share the gospel. And with Sam and some of his family, around winter time, this was actually right after Christmas, we packed all the kids that wanted to, and the kids, including Sam, and went over to a nearby pond to play ice hockey. And because, you know, it's thick enough, you can ice skate on it. And so as we drive, Sam is asking, so what did y'all get for Christmas? You know, and so I kind of took the conversation and asked Sam, so Sam, do you know why we celebrate Christmas? And he goes, I don't know. You know, kind of a 10-year-old. I don't know. I said, well, you know, and you start in a garden. Because with Czechs, they don't have concept of sin. They don't have the context. So you start in a garden, and you go from the garden to the manger. And I'll explain to him, you know, everything created, you know, then sin came. And so Jesus, really the purpose of Jesus coming on Christmas, or the reason we celebrate Christmas, is somebody is coming to deal with the sin problem that we have. You know, and obviously then you go through cross and resurrection. So we work kind of through the whole thing with Sam. And so he heard the gospel. And then it was great because his dad came to the pond just to hang out with us, watch us. And then on the way back, we gave him a ride. And his name was Peter. He was sitting beside me. And I told Peter, I said, Peter, your son had no idea why we celebrate Christmas. And he goes, no, Sam, how can you? And I said, well, let me tell you what I told him. And then, you know, just again, you start in the garden, you go to the manger, you go to the cross. And so, again, you get to share the gospel with these people who now trust you, who are friends with you. My kids, they can already hear Sam saying, you going to come outside and play? That's how it is. Our greatest opportunity to share the gospel is through soccer, believe it or not. God uses sports to reach the lost. I became a coach of a couple teams in a city that we targeting. And soccer has really proved to be a great instrument for this reason. If you look at a church in Czech or even here, stable churches and churches that have stable members, usually the members are families. I have a friend who planted a church with a bunch of teenagers. And when the college years came around, his church was just about empty. And so as you look around, you know, it's not you know, there's a reason why it's the fundamental, basic building block on any of any society, you know. But if you look at a church, the most stable members of the church are families, because they have things to do. They have kids to take care of. They are stable. They don't move around. They stay put, and they generally are consistent. And so we realize, you know, that's probably the best thing to do. Just approach families, but that's also the hardest thing to do because they don't have time. It's hard to reach the families. It's easy to reach teenagers because they don't have that many commitments and they're very flexible. At the same time, they're not very consistent. And so we realize, you know, families is what we need to focus on. And as we begin to think about it, families is what we focus on. Think about it. We're not focusing on just one generation. When you reach husband, father, for Christ, then what is he going to do with his kids? He's going to teach him, right? He's going to teach him Bible. I have a 15-year-old, I have 1-year-old. 2 generations. I have possibly 3 or 4 generations between the different ages of my children. But I also will be reaching my parents, which would be their grandparents. So when you reach a family, you're not reaching just one generation. You're reaching entire generations of people that get to hear the gospel through this one person that's reached. And so we see family being just really... I don't want to call it strategic, but really just a way to do it. Because it seems to provide the largest impact of the gospel in the lives of many people. And so soccer has really provided us with that, because I get to coach. I get to coach these kids. And their parents see that I'm coaching their kids, I'm taking care of them, I'm trying to bring them up in certain way, I'm trying to teach them something. I just don't say it. Soccer, a lot of times I deal with conflicts. You know, he kicked me in the shin, and I'm gonna get him back. And you just try to teach him about forgiveness. You try to teach him about even the principles. And then you get to meet the parents, and the parents begin to befriend you, and you become on more a relational level, not just professional level. And where it all leads, as you probably know, it leads to opportunities like we had at Easter. Around Easter, we were really looking for a way to reach the folks that are in our city with the gospel. Because Easter, after all, it's all about the resurrection of Christ. And so we wanted to figure out a meaningful way to share the gospel with the people that we've met over the years. And I wrote Eric and other pastors all around, if they could send us plastic eggs. We're going to do the Easter egg hunt. They never done it in Czech, as far as I know, unless it's missionaries from States. They never done it. So we were going to do Easter egg hunt. And so we had close to about 3,000 eggs, filled up about 2.5 of them. And on Easter or Monday following Easter, we had an Easter egg hunt at a local soccer club. The manager of the club... initially a little hesitant, but then he allowed us to use the facility, with the exception of soccer team. They're very touchy, soccer field, they're very touchy about that. So we got to use everything around. And we even had some folks who came out to cook. They're a Christian group from about an hour away that does kind of like a catering thing. And so we had this event with Easter eggs, and part of it was sharing the gospel, the resurrection eggs. You know, you get those, and I had kids come around the table, they would pick out the egg, they open it up, and they pull out these items. And all that thing does, really, it walks you through the passion of Christ. It walks you through the last week of his life. But it does not explain why it happened. And so when you go through all this, and you pick that egg that shows Jesus being in it, you know, on the cross dying, and then you take the last egg, which shows it's empty, it's white egg, then the Czechs begin to wonder, why in the world did Jesus go through all that, knowing that he's going to get out of the grave 3 days later? What's the point? Because that little thing doesn't really explain that. And so we were able to explain it. Listen, kids, how many of you have your parents teach you how to disobey? You know, and nobody raises their hands. Parents make sure that nobody raises their hands. Right? I said, how many of you have your parents teach you to obey? No, everybody, right? Again, parents, make sure that every child's hand is up, right? So that was a segue into, you know, why is it like that? Because the garden. And then we have Christmas. And then we have the cross. The reason Jesus did all that is to suffer in our place for our sin. And we had 100 people come to that. That's probably one of the largest gathering of unbelievers that has heard the gospel all at once. And it was a great blessing. If you know, we had really bad weather coming up. We were asking for prayers that we would have a better weather because it was supposed to sleet and snow. And I still have it on my phone. I have a picture of the forecast, which was right there, sleet, snow. And then I have the exact same time picture of the blue sky, like next to each other. It was great. It stayed dry. It didn't rain, didn't sleet, didn't do anything in that area. Until about 5 o'clock, we had about 3-minute, 4-minute hail shower, but it was just very light and people were already leaving. So everything that needed to happen, happened, and there was no complication with the weather. But people who were coming in were complaining that it snows where they are. Oh, it's snowing, you know, they were hailing and snowing. So we were just thankful that God really held off weather. And it was kind of like, we have plan A, God, and that's all we have. And that's why he prayed. This is how we prayed. We prayed, God, we have just one plan, and it's plan A. Because we don't have plan B. And only thing we know, you want the gospel to be preached. You want these people to hear the gospel. And it's and better the weather is, more people will show up, more people will hear the gospel. So please hold the weather off. And praise God. So here's picture. If it's going to advance, I don't know what's going on. Hey, here's the picture of the gathering with all the kids. You can maybe come to it, come and look at it a little later. The other thing we do is English camps, as you know, where folks from states come and they teach English, ESL, to various, again, this is family. So whole family comes to, it's usually some sort of a conference center somewhere in the middle of woods or something. You just kind of find conference center. They have those in check. You just got to find a good one because sometimes they're not very good. But they come, we divide the parents and the kids. The kids usually go with us, my wife and I, and she prepares a whole week of activities where they learn English at their level. They play games, they color, they build things. So we do different things with them. And the parents then, based on their skill level, get to learn English. And in the evening, because this is church-run event, we have a worship service. And we tell people, this is, look, you're getting a great deal. All you're paying is for food and lodging. Because these folks from states, they're not charging you any class fees or anything. And so we're going to have worship service, and you're welcome to come. It's still going to be in English, but we will have it translated into Czech as well, so you know what's going on. And every night they get to hear the gospel, and usually all people come. And after that you have a little discussion group time that follows. Now, to give you an idea again, these English camps have been going on for about 16 years. It was after 13 years we saw one convert. And it was a girl. And when she shared the fact that she became a Christian with her parents, they cut her off from any Christian influence. They basically tried to keep her away from any Christian friends, going to church, things like that. So, it's not always like that. It could be hit and miss. Some parents might react like this. Some parents might not. I remember when I first wanted to tell my parents about becoming a Christian, I was praying for 3 days, kind of in and out, like, Lord, because I wasn't sure if they're going to kick me out of the house or what's going to happen. I mean, I came back from States at that point, so I had a ticket, I could fly back, but I really didn't want to just be kicked out and get on a plane and go back. I wanted to, you know, spend time with them. And so it took me a few days just to pray up the courage, and once I told them, it just kind of came out, and they're like, okay, just, you know, just don't become crazy and fanatic like your uncle who is now in States, and that's another story. He just happens to be a Bible-believing Christian who loves to share the gospel, so that makes him fanatic. This is how it looks usually. You know, one of us is preaching, the other one is translating. This is part of the group right here. This is our church planting city. You can ask my wife. These pictures are so deceiving because the blue sky is there only during the summer, generally. Right now, for the most part, you will have clouds from about the mid-November all the way till March, beginning of April. And it's just cloudy. You don't see the sun. It's really foggy. The fog is so thick that you would probably not be able to see the end of this parking lot. And I'm not joking. That's not an exaggeration. In fact, what happens a lot of times, the fog freezes. And the roads end up being slick. The fog is so thick that roads are constantly wet, like if it rained. But it never rains. It's just really foggy and humid. So when you see sun once in a while, everybody is out, even if it's just negative 10, you know, because it's not usual. This is our, right now, small group. Now, some of these folks kind of are in and some are out. Folks that came to work with us from our home church, actually, they were one of the casualties of the mission field and they left. They went to Ireland because that seemed to be a better fit and they could kind of manage that environment better as far as I know. So they left, so they're not with us anymore. But for the most part, the group is about four and a half families, and we hope we have some unbelieving friends that I'm going to send Eric a big list of people you can pray for. One example is for the manager of the soccer club was just amazed at the event that we had with the kids, and he wants to talk about Jesus. So that's great. That's a blessing. We have a bunch of other friends that we met in our small village that came to it, and you know, we've been sharing gospel with them. Actually, our neighbor across the street, his name is Anthony, just like me. We're really, really good friends, helping each other. They're watching our house for us. He has heard the gospel over 50 times, if not more, and he still has not come to Christ. So that kind of gives you an idea. The last thing we do is the Czech Bible Institute. I'm part of... what I do there is I teach systematic theology, preaching. Occasionally I teach introduction to the Bible books or history. Now, you don't get an MDiv, you don't get anything fancy, but this is one of the few, if not the only, well-functioning official school that is conservative in the country. Everything else is liberal, or it's mainly on like a one get together in the afternoon kind of lecture. This is very much more than that. It's part of the Master's Academy International. If you know, John MacArthur started a network of school, and this school became part of it after a period of kind of a trial, where you are tested, make sure that you're up to the standard. So we became part of that. As part of being in the Czech Bible Institute, like I said, you don't get any MDivs. You get a certificate that you've done the work. It's not easy. Like students in the introduction to the Bible have to summarize. This is one of the examples. They have to summarize with one or two sentences every chapter of every book in the Scripture. So by the time the year is up, you have a good sense of what's in the Bible. Part of it is also conferences that kind of help not only the country in general and people who are willing to learn and grow, but also make the school a little more visible. So what happens, we would host conference that would be focused on certain topic like discernment, because we begin to notice that there is not much discernment in denominations and among the Christians in general. And then we would have sometimes speakers come in, sometimes we would just do it ourselves, all the pastors and missionaries who are present in Czech. And so... These conferences, anywhere between 100 and 200 people. One of them was with, I don't know if you can see, this is some of the preacher guys that I've trained. These are the students. And, you know, when you see this picture, it's a picture of God's faithfulness. I want you to think about it. Because we're in the most atheistic country in the world. I'd ask professors here at seminary that I went to, ask, do you ever have to ever pray to get students? And some of them actually say... One of them, he's kind of tongue-in-cheek. He's a funny guy. He said, well, sometimes we pray we get rid of some. But they never pray that they would have students. Because you open a seminary here, you know, they come. In Czech, you have to pray you have students. Because you don't know if you will have any. He would have one application in the end of August. And schools would start in September. And you're like, so who's going to be here? And then on the day off, 40 students show up. And so it's a great blessing. It's an answer to prayer every time we see a full class. So, and we have counseling program. We have a preaching program as well, and regular intro. So some of the conferences, we have a conference with James White, who came to kind of discuss the issue with Protestantism and Catholicism, because ecumenical movement is huge in Czech. If you want to talk about that, it's I got involved in that, and it's pretty rough. We can talk about it afterwards if you want to hear about it. And then we had a couple other conferences. Steve Lawson came to a couple of those, where we were discussing the idea of truth. That was right around the memory or commemoration of the death of Jan Hus, or John Hus. And then the discernment following week, and or following year. And then one of the biggest conferences, which I was just amazed by the amount of people, was with Paul Washer. And you know, he just came and preached on the gospel. And we had 600 people from Czech, from Slovakia, Germany, Austria, Poland. And you know, we provide translations as well. And what we do is we have the main speaker, but we also have speakers from Czech who preach in Czech. And so it helps everybody see that, you know what, we can, you know, we can grow in gospel here from what we have, from the people who are here present. They can teach us. Obviously, we introduce the school, give people opportunity to come and study with us. But that was one of the biggest, and I think it was really great, a good conference. I think our kids love it. There is usually an opportunity for people to buy books. Because, again, you look in a country where, you know, the past 40 years, you know, during communism and prior to that, it was very heavily Catholic. You don't have much of a Protestant presence. And if there was any, it was usually liberal. And so now, our things that are happening is, you know, you try to translate books. Like when I teach theology, I have to write my own notes. I usually just cheat and translate somebody else's notes and kind of fix them up, you know, just pull things together. You know, I give them credit. I mean, right? I'm not, you know, but you don't have the luxury of going to Amazon and have a book in a couple days that you use as your class textbook. You don't have that. So a lot of times we have to translate stuff, have somebody translate. I think Paul Washer's ministry is now promised translation of 30 books. So we got the opportunity to just pick through a list of books that we'd like to translate it, whether it's counseling, theology, and all that. And, you know, TMAI also helps. I think they send us now, MacArthur just put out a systematic theology. So they send us about 300 of those, which is great. So we're going to try to translate that, because we right now don't have a systematic theology to teach out of. I have to do my notes, and the only one they have is Ryrie, which if you look at a... Yeah, exactly. Doctrine of Salvation chapter, you have to almost skip that thing, because, you know, the Lordship issue. So we hope to have that. We try to publish, for example, MacArthur's Study Bible. And there is a great study Bible in Czech. It's kind of like NASB on steroids, really good. And the problem was, it was translated by Charismatic. Believe it or not, great translation, just phenomenal. Translated by a group of Charismatic guys. And when we asked them if we can use it as a base for MacArthur's Study Bible, it didn't go over well. So, I don't know why. So, we had to... they know their stuff too, you know.
We got a lab, bro.
But so it ended up being that there is a couple of volumes that MacArthur put out, which is kind of like Matthew Henry version, where you have just the Old Testament and New Testament, big books, kind of go through. And so that's what's been published. So anyway, yeah, like I say, if you have any questions, just ask me afterwards or now. And this is kind of a just thank you. You know, we want to thank you that you're praying for us, that you send us encouragements, that you send us eggs when we need some. You cannot find those in Czech. I tried. We really see it, and I think it was William Carey when he was trying to make the case for the reaching of the pagans all around the world. He made a case for the necessity of reaching the lost, the heathen. And when he made this case before the Baptist Board of, you know, ministers in England, he asked him, okay, so who will go down into the well to pull these souls out of the despair? And nobody said anything. And he said, okay, I will go. And as he said that, he turned around and said, but you will hold the rope. And the picture he was giving him, listen, I'm going to go down there. I'm going to be lowered in there for you. But you got to hold my rope.
Yeah.
And ask everybody, who's more important? The guy at the bottom holding on to the rope, trying to pull people out, or people up at the top holding the rope? Who's more important? See, if there's nobody at the top and I'm at the bottom holding on to the rope, I'm no good. Because I have nobody holding the rope. I'm just plumbing. But if there's nobody at the bottom of the rope and you're holding up the rope at the top, what's the point? You're just holding the rope that has nothing on the end of it.
Yeah.
So the answer is they're both important. They work together. And not only that, whatever happens down at the bottom becomes not only a benefit and a credit to the spiritual account, as Paul put it in Philippians 4, to the guy at the bottom, but also to the guy at the top, right? So really all these things that you see, that you know, the prayers that have been answered, the people, the many people that heard the gospel, it doesn't just go to my credit. It goes to everyone's credit who is part of this ministry. And you are part of this ministry by supporting us and praying for us. So I want you to see this not just like, oh, the Valhalla succeeded. No, it's God succeeding through His church, through you and me, together. So that's the end of it. If you have any questions, I'll...
I do have prayer cards, and there is a email address on the bottom of it. If you would like to receive our newsletter, you can send us a note. So.